This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, and from Nashville, I'm your host, Gary Holt. Joining me in Missouri is our co-host, Tina Mae Weber. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Gary. How are you today?
We are doing great. The weather is getting beautiful. A little bit of fall is in the air, and I think everybody is eager to get out and ride on the trails. But we have a
Day of summer.
It is, it is. So you're going to be celebrating fall?
Oh, of course.
And how do you celebrate?
Saddling up. I think that's about the best way to do it.
Good way to celebrate. But anyway, a fun show today, and we have a great guest joining us. Why don't you tell our audience who we'll be talking with?
I am so excited. Today we have Lynn Crow, a pastor and long rider from Canada. He has a mission in his heart, and he rides with a purpose.
All right, so we look forward to talking with Lynn, and it's going to be a fun show. I think one that you'll find very, very interesting, not only the reason that he's riding, but the journeys that he's taken as he's helping these kids. But we remind you that Saddle Up America is made possible by great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the Western and equestrian lifestyle in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. And by TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. TrailGuard was founded with one mission in mind, and that's guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more about TrailGuard today at TrailGuard.org, and by Legacy Benefit Group, insurance and benefit planning for individuals, families, and businesses for over 30 years. You can visit Legacy Benefit Group at LegacyBenefitGroup.net. So grab a big cup of coffee. Take a deep seat in the saddle, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Lynn Crow. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
In the land of the long road, dreaming of the springtime, first crocus in the snow, coffee in a go-cup, he's headed for the oil rig. Land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky. Castle, the red deer and the battle, rivers in a dry land, feed the cities of the plain. But nothing lasts forever on the great divide, land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky. In the night, I have heard the thunder roll. In my day, I have felt the wind and rain. Like the cowboy said, I wish I'd seen the buffalo. Maybe they'll come back again. He's gonna get up early, try and make a dollar. The only girl he wanted took the greyhound for the coast, and she was bound believing that she will not forget him. For the land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky. The land of shining mountains, big Alberta sky.
Let's see, in Tyson's land of shining mountains, and we're going to welcome a fellow Canadian at VN's, and that is Lynn Crow. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. So good to be with you this morning.
Good to have you. Tina May, come back in again.
I say good morning, Lynn.
Hey, good morning, Tina May. Thank you so much for all those updates on our Facebook. Sure have enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Well, we've been excited. We've been waiting to talk to you for quite a while. You've been out of the country, and we're going to talk about that, but let's get a little bit of background on you, Lynn. How did you get involved with horses, and how did you come into the ministry? And then tell us how all of this came together to be these long rides that you've been doing.
Well, the Lord's been good, Gary, and gelled those things all together for us. I started a church up here in Canada in 1999, and God just called me up to a little place called Orillia, Ontario. That's where I pastor, and since then we've been able to start three satellite churches from our church and a children's home in Cambodia. While I was working in the Philippines on an orphanage that we had helped to get started. We don't run it there. We only run the one in Cambodia, but we were helping them with their buildings. God touched my heart to do more in Asia than what I was already doing, and so I went on a survey trip with a cowboy from Arizona, a friend of mine from Ohio, and went to Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand, crossing the Mekong River in Cambodia. On my way back home, I met a little girl, and she was begging for some food. She had a little bag around her neck with a string holding it on, or for some money. She had no hands, crooked feet. She weighed about 35 pounds. I surmise she must be 7 years old. Turned out she was 16 years old and starving to death. And God broke my heart for Cambodia. And so we started our children's home over there. In my several of my trips to the Philippines, we were coming back in 1995, and God was speaking to me about doing more in Asia at that point, and with limited resources, I didn't know what more we could do. And then the Lord just put together an idea called Ride for Missions. Horses have been a big part of our family for 40 years, and so we started using our horses to raise money for mission work. And so our first ride, we did in 1996.
Well,
wow.
that was quite a ride, because you didn't just ride to the town next door.
No, I actually rode to the country next door. I started out in Fairbanks, Alaska, and rode to El Paso, Texas, 4,200 miles.
And that was your first ride?
That was our first long ride to raise money for the Philippines, yes, sir.
Wow. So, and you came very close to riding into the third country, because when you're in El Paso, you're almost in Mexico.
Yeah, I couldn't help but cross the border on foot, and my wife and I and boys, we took a tourist trip for one day into Mexico, since we were so close.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that first ride, and how did you put that together? What was your planning process, and what was the ride actually like? Because we want to talk a little bit about the rides themselves, and then, of course, we want to talk a whole lot more about these kids and what you're doing to help them. But with this first ride, how did you put this together?
You know, I decided I wanted to make a long ride, and I just took a map with a ruler, and I drew a straight line from central Alaska to southern U.S., and I decided that El Paso would be my end of the trail, and after I drew that line, I started to customize it and change it, getting around rivers and lakes and tried cities and so on. Didn't always work, but it allowed me to come down through Alaska into Yukon, to British Columbia, then into Washington, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and then eventually to Texas. And through that, we saw the Lord do some miraculous things for us. It was absolutely amazing. And we're so grateful. We could see the Lord's hand of protection, but also supply for us every step of the way.
Right, right. Now, when you made that first ride, Lynn, who was riding with you? Your wife? Was she traveling with you on that trip and some other folks? Or did you pick up riders along the way? Or how did that
My first three rides have all been solo. I've been the only rider. My wife had a motor home with a horse trailer behind it, so she's really the hero on this story. She pulled that thing all the way from Alaska to Texas. And I would, you know, look at a map and say to my wife, you know, go ahead 25, 30 miles and set up camp, and I'll try to make it in by night. And usually I did. Sometimes I didn't. You know, I'd just spend the night outdoors, and we had a plan. If I didn't show up for 3 days, she would go to the next town and wait for me there at a visitor information center, and I would do likewise, because sometimes I didn't have the capability we had today as far as GPS and so on. All I had was a compass and a map. And one case when I was up in British Columbia, my wife was stayed on the road, and I didn't. And so I was going cross country, came out further south than I thought she was. And after riding 100 miles, I realized I'd missed my connection because she was further north.
Me?
And so we finally did make a connection. You know, we said if we did get separated, go to the next town, leave a message at the visitor information center, so at least we would know where we'd been.
Well, that's cool. Now, as you've been making these rides, not just this first one, but the other rides that have followed on that, what kind of an impact has your journey and the purpose for your journey had on the people that you've encountered along the way?
We've had tremendous response from folks that we've come across. The media really has been very helpful to us, and they would pick up not immediately when we would start a ride. Usually it was a quarter or one third of the way through. And for example, in one case I was coming down through British Columbia, it was much way late at night. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and pouring rain, and no stars or moon or anything to go by, and I was still in the backcountry. I hadn't made my way out to a road yet. And as I'm riding along hoping to find a road, I heard all this music, and I thought, who in the world could be out here with a ghetto blaster this time of night in the pouring rain? And after a little bit, the music got louder and louder, and then I started to recognize that it was drums. And so I thought, I think there's, you know, maybe some Indians in this area. And so I finally got to the road, continued on down about a mile and a half, and I came across a powwow that was going on. And by the time I got in there, it was 11:30. And but they were still pretty active, and looked like a scene from the 1800s. It was about 30 teepees up with fires inside, so that they were glowing. And when I rode into their camp, hoping for a cup of coffee, a bunch of ladies and kids come running out to greet me. And they had been expecting me. They'd heard about a ride on the radio, and they said, "Oh, we were hoping you'd stop." And so they brought me
gave
me a wonderful meal, and I must have drank a gallon of coffee. They tried to get me to stay the night, but I said, you know, I need to continue on down the road to get to where my family is. So I didn't get into camp till about 3 o'clock in the morning on that particular night. But sure did a wonderful time with the folks I met there.
Yeah.
And every ride has been unique. I mean, folks that I have met, even on this trip, this last one I just finished down in the Navajo Reservation in Arizona, we come across some wonderful folks on the reservation that brought us in, let us stay at their ranches, or, you know, would supply us with some meat or some kind of food, and very, very kind.
Well, I mean, I think part of the journey for people is not only the impact that you might have on the folks that you meet, but the impact that they have on you. And from what you're saying, they really had an impact on you with their warmth and their generosity as you were making this this journey. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring on another Canadian, a good friend of ours, Eli Barcy. And this is a song called Portrait of a Cowgirl. I think you'll like this one, Lynn. And when we come back, we may finish going down to El Paso, but you also participated and did a ride that was part of the 100th Calgary Stampede. And we want to come back and talk about that just a little bit, but we'll be right back to talk with Tina May and with Lynn on Equestrian Legacy Radio.
On a cold winter morning, the first day of the year, a baby girl was born in a farmhouse, so I hear. The year was 1929, it seems so long ago, and on that farm that little girl soon began to grow. She became a teacher, and she taught every grade. Her only way to get to work was on her horse each day. She got married to a farm boy, three little ones they had. For 60 years they made a life, and home there on that land. Now her life's become a portrait of a cowgirl true and strong. She always takes the high road, and her heart's in tune with God.
TrailGuard, 24-hour roadside travel assistance. TrailGuard offers unlimited vehicle towing to a dealership that services your make vehicle, a second tow vehicle to get your trailer and horses home or to your destination, 24-hour coverage for you and your vehicle or the one that you're driving or anyone driving your vehicle, and a 24-hour personal assistant, and this might have been good for you, Lynn, to help plan your trip and much, much more. TrailGuard was founded with one mission in mind, and that's guarding you down life's trails. You can learn more about Trail Guard today at trailguard.org. And, yeah, that 24-hour personal assistant might have been helpful. Saved me some of that
you
plotting. You'd have not made that 100-mile detour, I guess, if they'd been around. But, yeah, but anyway, you've done some Pony Express type rides and some fundraising that really kind of encompass endurance. And let's talk about those. Two of them, one was in 98 and another one in 2002. Yeah, let's talk about those two.
Well, my first one in 1998, we went and challenged a record that was set by a Pony Express rider back in the 1860s. Of course, the down in the Salt Lake Desert, it's pretty much untouched to what it would have looked like back in the 1860s. You can still see the wagon ruts in the desert floor from the Butterfield stage route and the Pony Express route. Some of the stations are still there, the concrete foundations at least. The Historical Society has rebuilt some of the stations so that, you know, you'd have an idea of what they looked like. Pony Bob Haslam was the fellow that set the record. There's been a lot of famous fellows ride the Pony Express, you know, Bill Cody and others.
Right.
But Pony Bob had ridden 190 miles one way, and then there was an Indian uprising, and many of the stations had been attacked and horses driven off. And so after 190 miles, he slept for 9.5 hours, and the station manager asked him to ride 190 back again. Nobody else wanted to go, and so he said he would do it. So he did 380 miles with only 9.5 hours sleep in between.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so we decided we'd go and take a shot at that. And my first trip, I went and rode 151 miles in 24 hours, changing horses every 10 to 12 miles. We had 21 horses with us. And it's interesting leading up to that. It takes a lot of conditioning to get a horse into condition. Those Pony Express guys were incredibly tough. You know,
yeah.
The youngest Pony Express rider was 11 years old.
Oh, wow. Amazing. I never realized that.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys were pretty young when they started. The advertisement for a Pony Express rider was young, wiry, skinny fellows wanted, under the age of 18 years old, must be expert riders, willing to risk death daily, orphans preferred. And so our desire to help orphanages and the Pony Express just gelled itself together.
Yeah.
And we had... I've been working on a ranch down in Colorado for a little bit, working my horses and just babysitting a herd of cattle. And, well, my wife was up here teaching school for the balance of the year with my boys, so I lived by myself down there. And I would run – I had six horses. I was running every day about 10 miles apiece trying to get them ready for that trip. And we had had a bit of an incident. I was coming down a Forest Service trail from the ranch and – came around a corner, and there's a cattle guard, and we had a swing gate that was almost always, you know, open, but for some reason it was about three quarters closed, and I thought, well, I can still blow through there, and I was on my favorite horse, the General, and just as we were going through that gate at about 40 miles an hour, he sidestepped, and of course, you know how those gates work. There's a metal latch that sticks out about 3 inches, and it had caught, just as he sidestepped, you know, it caught my kneecap and ripped it out.
Oh.
And, I pulled up my horse, looked down, and the kneecap was extruded out past my leather chaps. And my horse and I talked about it for a moment, and we thought, well, there's not much else to do but keep riding down. I was on my way to get the mail, and rode down to the mailbox and waited. I couldn't get off my horse. Finally, somebody came to get their mail, and I handed my key to this lady, and she said, I don't normally get other people's mail when they're sitting right there in their horse. I said, well, ma'am, I had an accident. I can't get off. And she said, well, what did you do? I told her, and she said, well, I better look at that. And she came around the other side. Of course, by then, my boot full of blood and dripping out of the stirrups, and my kneecap looked terribly bad hanging out of the side of the chaps. And she said, oh, I'll call an ambulance. I said, no, ma'am, I'm a Canadian. I don't have any insurance. I can't go in an ambulance. She said, well, I'll take you in my truck. I said, no, I can't even go in your truck. I can't go to the hospital. I said, just get my mail. I said, I'll call the vet. He'll look after me. So she went ahead and she got my mail, and I rode back 5.5 miles to the ranch house and called a friend of mine down in Durango. And he said, no, I don't do people. I said, I need a favor. He said, I don't do favors in this kind of thing. And I said, well, at least get me some stuff. And so he left me a box down in Bayfield, and I got my pickup truck, drove 45 minutes down to Bayfield and picked up the little box he'd left with me with some sutures and different things. And so I went back up to the ranch house and got a bowl of alcohol and put in some scissors and some fishing line and sutures and stuff that he had given me. Started to go to work. Once I got my duds off, I realized I didn't need just a Band-Aid. It needed surgery. And So I prayed about that. And there's all this yellow spaghetti type stuff hanging off the end of my kneecap. I didn't know what that was till later. So I cut it off. And I realized later those were my ligaments. And so I started to work on those a little bit, pulled the kneecap back into place. And the top ligaments were still attached. It was only the bottom ones that were shattered.
And, oh, man.
So I got it into place and started to sew it across. And so I had to cut off the excess, because it wasn't a nice clean cut. I had to cut off the excess flesh that was ragged. And then my phone rang. I got 5 stitches in. My phone rang. It's my wife calling. I said, "Well, honey, bad timing."
Oh, my God.
She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm sewing." She said, "What are you sewing?" I said, "Me, call me later." And so I put another 6 stitches in, put 11 stitches across the front of it to hold it into place. And so I started the Pony Express off handicapped. But nonetheless, I still had several months to get ready for it. Today it's 90% good. During the time of that ride, I had guys all over America helping me, cowboys here and there that volunteered their horses for that ride. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
To give your favorite horse to somebody that's going to ride them out full tilt, across the desert. And it was 110 degrees even in September when we did that.
Yeah.
And riding at nighttime, and of course you get desert weather can be unpredictable at times. And, so we got 21 head all spread out, people working on them, different areas. And then in May, everything fell apart. I had guys calling me, can't make it, it's just not going to work, and good excuses. One guy, his wife had a baby, had twins on the way, and they just found out one had died before she'd given birth. And then there was other fellows that said, just for extreme reasons, folks just couldn't make it happen. So I always ended up with just one man and my 6 horses. And we had like pickup trucks, trailers, water trucks, everything set up, and it all fell apart.
So
I prayed about that. And it takes 3 to 4 months to get a horse legged up and ready for that kind of a trip. So I decided to take a Saturday off and rode up into Middle Mountain up at the San Juans and up to Emerald Lake. And it was early on a Saturday morning. I prayed up there in the a lot of snow still up in the high peaks at that time of year. I was in about 3 feet of snow, no other tracks but mountain lion and elk in my own. And I knelt down beside my horse, and I don't even know how long I prayed. I just said, "Lord, this is your deal, and if you want it to happen, you're going to have to put it back together, because I've exhausted all my contacts, all of the guys I know down here. I don't know where to get horses. I don't know how we can do this." And I don't know how long I was praying, but when I get up, the snow was melted around me. And my horse was waiting patiently. I climbed back in the saddle. My knees were stiff and sore from kneeling down. And I started heading down. Now, you understand when the warm air comes up off the desert floor and it hits those high peak mountains, what you end up is a huge fog up there. And so I'm riding down in this huge fog, still, 3 feet of snow, but I'm cold and I'm in a hurry. And there's snow blowing up all around me, but gravity's helping. I'm going downhill. And I break through the cloud, and here I see at the end of the trail that you can drive, there's a guy up there in a pickup truck, and he's got the hood up and he's looking around. I thought, who in the world would be up here this time of year? And I thought, oh my, must be a tourist and must be, broke down. So I thought I better ride over there and have a look. At the same time I do that, he looks over and he sees this cowboy rubbing out of heaven, out of this big cloud, and snow blowing up all around me. And he's thinking to himself, where in the world did this guy come from? And we rode over, and within minutes, God put our hearts together. And this fellow's a wonderful friend of mine from Arizona. And he said, I like what you're doing. And he said, I'm a Christian. He said, I got 150 head of horse. He said, every one of them's available, whichever ones you want. Should I get pickup trucks? I got a veterinarian. I got a farrier. Everything you need. He said, I'm in. And God put that together in 15 minutes, and we did the ride back in September.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I got to take a break after that story, because, and I'm shifting my song selection around, because it just fits. But this is a song that I think will tie in with what you were just talking about, and the way that the Lord answers prayers when you're not really expecting it. But this is one by Joni Harms called Never Alone. And we're going to come right back and talk more with Lynn, and we'll find out about how the knee held up when he made this journey number 6 in just a moment when we come back. Saddle Up America, and Lynn has made many journeys to help raise children, help raise money to build orphanages for children, and along the way he's become a semi-surgeon. So how's that knee doing now, Lynn?
Hey, it's 90% good. I'm very pleased with it. I had a plastic surgeon have a look at it for me. A few days after I showed it up, and he said, "I don't know what you did on the inside." He said, "You could show for me anytime." And, so I was pleased with that.
That's good. That is good. Well, the trip that you just talked about was the first one that you did, and you completed that one, I think, 151. How did that turn out? How many horses did your new friend from Arizona provide for you, and how did
he provided, he did an amazing job. You know, he provided 15 horses for us, and with my six, we had 21 horses, and it was a blessing. He came himself, of course, and then we had about close to 40 people that were helping, and plus a TV, two TV fellows from Canada came and televised it. We ended up raising, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of about $90,000 for the orphanage in Philippines.
Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, wow.
And then we went back to try it again in 2002, back to the Salt Lake Desert, just south of Simpson Springs in Utah, over across the border to Nevada and back. Did a little better mileage on that one, but ran out of horses. I was down to only 15 horses on that trip, and I did 308 miles in 46 hours. And that's riding day and night. And we probably could have easily broken Buffalo Bill Cody's record of 320 miles because I did 308, and I could have easily got the extra stretch out of my horses. But Buffalo Bill was one of my childhood heroes. I didn't want to break his record.
Well, that's true. We don't want to bring our heroes down. So that was great. Well, now the next ride that you did, and this was kind of a special ride. I guess this was back in 2005, and that was what, during the centennial celebration of the Calgary Stampede. And
it was the 100th year anniversary actually of Calgary, the city.
Yeah.
And we had a wonderful trip, 1,000 miles across Canadian prairies following what's called the Redcoat Trail, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Trail. And it was the first time I had multiple riders. The other trips, I was the only rider. But we did 1,000 miles in 7 days with seven riders, just in a relay. And when we got there, we were able to put eight of my horses, plus a friend of mine, Gary Stites, allowed us to use his stagecoach and put it in the Calgary Stampede Parade.
Wow. Wow. Well, that would be quite an event. Tina May, 1,000 miles in 7 days.
That's a lot of riding.
Yeah, how many miles a day were they doing?
They were doing quite a bit.
they were doing lots, you betcha.
Gosh.
You know, some would do more than others.
Testing her math right there.
Well, what is that? It was a bunch of miles.
But that was quite a deal. And was that raising money as well for the orphanages?
It was, only that one's 2002 was to raise money for the Philippines again. 2005 was for 2002 was for Mexico, the orphanage.
Okay.
2005 was for Philippines again.
Okay.
And one of the fun things on that ride, we were carrying a letter from the Prime Minister of Canada to deliver to the Mayor of Calgary because of the anniversary. It was just a congratulatory letter, and we kept it with us for the whole ride. It went in a saddlebag, created from rider to rider, and I got the privilege to ride up the front stairs of the city hall with my stallion and right up to the front foyer, but somebody forgot to inform the security I was coming. But we had a warm reception, but the mayor knew we were coming, and so he came down, and we got pictures with him sitting on my stud and delivering that important letter. So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, gosh. I like the way that you phrased that. We had a warm reception, so they weren't expecting us. That's pretty neat.
Seems
that
like
is
everybody
pretty neat.
Had a gun but me.
goodness. Well, the next ride that you did. Now you had some in 2000. The one you just finished. You started in May of 2014.
That's correct.
And how many orphanages was this to help?
This was five orphanages in five countries. Our
okay.
own that we run in Cambodia, and one in the Philippines, one in Mexico, and one brand new one just started a year and a half ago in Guatemala. In fact, I'll be going there in November. And also one that hasn't started yet in India. We have some people on the ground doing the groundwork in India for us. And Lord willing, they'll have something together here by the end of this year.
Wow.
Well, it's a blessing that you're doing this. Let's talk just briefly. I mean, we can't be too brief because this last one that you just finished up, you started in May of 2014, finished in June of this year. And that was for an unbelievable, how many numbers of miles?
6,900 miles.
6,900 miles from Dead Horse in Alaska to...
Yeah, can you imagine anybody starting a ride in Dead Horse?
No, I can't. I cannot. And then ended up in Guadalajara, Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell us. I mean, this was a year of riding and to raise money. We want to talk a little bit about the trip. What was your fundraising goal for this trip?
We'd hoped to raise $1 million on this trip. We didn't raise $1 million. I think we're up around $200,000. We're still pretty pleased about that. And there is still money coming in, and so we're thankful those folks that have gotten behind us on that. We've seen all types of weather, all types of wildlife, of course, a lot of times close up, and we've seen up in the far north herds of caribou, wolves, grizzly, black bear, mountain lion, coyote, fox, and deer, and elk. I decided to stay out overnight up in the Brooks Range. That's one of the last frontiers in North America, hundreds of miles with no people. And I told my wife in advance, I'm not going to come in tonight. I'm going to camp out. And so I set up my camp. Tethered my horse out about 30, 40 feet from where my camp was going to be. And I started the fire and got my saddle out for my pillow and saddle blanket to crawl under. And then after I'd had my supper and my coffee, I was tired. I went to sleep right away. But about an hour and a half into my sleep, my horse started to snort and blow and warn me. And so I woke up, and here I have a bear coming into camp. So I started to talk to him and discourage him. Didn't want to listen much, but he was just curious. He was weaving back and forth, smelling the air and stopping and checking me out. So I got my coffee pot, rattled it around, made lots of noise, and got some rocks and chucked it at him, and eventually he went looking for a friendlier camp. And so then I got back under my saddle blanket and went back to sleep again. And I guess an hour and a half passed, and my horse started to snort and stomp again, and woke me up. And so I looked up, and sure enough, here's another bear. It's a different one, but he's coming into camp, and he's doing the same thing. He's going back and forth and, sniffing the air. And when he's getting almost into my comfort zone, I didn't like that. And so I got my coffee pot and rattled it lots, and so he went looking for friendlier camp as well. And then finally I had my third bear come into camp, only this was a larger bear, and he was on the prod. He wasn't curious at all. He had me in his sights, his nose down to the ground, his ears flat back, and he's just in like a bulldozer. And so I did the same thing. I got my coffee pot and rattled around, didn't seem to make any difference. Finally he got in my comfort zone about 12 feet away, and I had a little sawed-off 12-gauge I carry with me and fired it at his feet and dusted him with some gravel and dirt, and he jumped back about 30 feet. And I thought, well, that's good. It's done. But then he came again, and I couldn't discourage him. And he got right up close, and finally I said, I got pepper spray, and, I carry two guns with me when I'm in grizzly country, and he wouldn't listen. And so I thought, one more chance. I got a big rock and bounced off his shoulder, and he went looking for friendlier camp. So I was glad it ended that way. In hindsight, I wish I'd killed him. I went to the University of Alberta and took a course on bears many years ago, and learned that once they lose their fear of man, they don't ever get it back. And the next guy that comes along might not have bear spray or a gun, and may turn out different.
That's right.
Well, wow. that's quite
You had some pretty good adventures.
Well, we've had lots of time in order to experience them, for sure. That trip took, I calculated it to take 1 year. It took me 1 year and 4 days. And, you know, coming down through Arizona, I come across an elk that you wouldn't see if you were driving by. And I was on the road, but she was way back in and laying on the ground. And I looked, and she had her leg caught in the fence. And I thought that she was dead. And so I just rode over to have a look, and I noticed the wind kind of blew her ear back and forth, and I realized there was no wind. And I thought, no, she's alive. And I looked, and she blinked at me. And so I went down about 150 feet and tied up my horse and pulled my pistol out and went back to shoot her. I just thought that she had a broken leg because it was caught up in the barbed wire and she was hanging from it. And it was evident she'd been there a long time. The scrapes and wounds on her legs were, you know, dried over, and she was done in. And so I cocked my pistol, and I looked at that leg, and I said, you know, I don't think it's broken. And so I put my pistol away and got my Leatherman out, and I cut the fence, and that leg flopped down, and she just stayed there momentarily and started to shiver and shake, and then she jumped up on all fours. And I've been stepping back to give her room, and then she charged me. I pulled my pistol again, but, you know, she wasn't aggressive. She was just confused. And so she stopped before she got to me. I was glad. And then she spun around, and she made a run for my horse. My horse didn't understand.
No.
And my horse started to go around the tree I'd tethered him to until he was snubbed right up and couldn't go anywhere. And elk stopped short of my horse as well. Again, you know, she was just disoriented. And I stayed for about 15 minutes just to make sure she was, you know, okay. And she put lots of weight on that leg, walked around, and so we give her at least one more day of freedom on her life anyway.
Well, you've had quite the experiences while you're out traveling on these journeys. And how many horses do you usually take with you, Lynn, as you're traveling like this?
This ride, we used a total of 8 horses on this ride, the 6,900-mile ride, and it was only by design and by choice. I started out riding 2 from Dead Horse down, and those 2 would have made it all the way to southern Mexico, no problem. General, my mainstay horse, 23 years old last year, and is 24, and he made the first trek from the Arctic Ocean to southern Alberta. He would have made it all the way, but he and I had a misfortune in Yukon. We took a fall, and you got to know I was coming through some pretty crazy country. Anybody that's ever traveled the Rockies would know, you know, every day's a new day. I've been on top of the Rockies at the pinnacle, you know, where you're sometimes up 10 or 12,000 feet and going across a goat trail or a sheep trail right at the peak. And you look down at your toes and your stirrups, and you see blue sky on both sides. And you have 2,000-foot, you know, slope on both sides. You can see for 70 miles. It's absolutely exhilarating. The thing I noticed, there was no vegetation up there. It's all bald rock, you know, and I equate that even in my preaching. You know, sometimes we love the mountaintop experiences in our life when everything's going good and we've got a job and we've got a new car or a new truck, or maybe we picked up a new horse and everything's well, our kids are doing good, but we hate the valleys in our life. But the valleys are where the fruit grows, and that's where all the vegetation is. That's really you know, our nutrition comes from. And that's the same as I ride through the valleys and you see all the lush green and so on, and I think, wow, this is where we grow spiritually, and this is where we grow stronger and our character is formed, is in the valleys, not on the mountaintops, even though we love it up there.
Right. That's right.
And take
great...
those valleys to appreciate those mountaintops.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a great analogy there. Well, we're going to head down to Mexico in just a second, but this is another song that I want to take a quick break, and it's one called Kivikero by Mary Kay, and we'll find out if this was your first trip down through Mexico riding and what it was like as you rode through Mexico into Guatemala. But we're talking with Lynn Crow, and Tina Mae Weber is back. We had a little technical thing going on, but she's right on top of things now, and we'll be back to talk with them when we come back on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
Talking, only the horses he looks in the eye. Too old for the young hands to notice, too Mexican for them to even try. Light a candle for those young cowboys, they soon will swallow their pride. They'll see the patron saint of horsemen when that old vaquero rides. When the old vaquero rides, cabalgando con gracia libre y veloz, hermano del viento feroz de cientos de años atrás. Misterioso vaquero capaz. ¡Qué vaquero! ¡Qué hombre! ¡Hare! Dust rises like smoke from an altar, whose dance to a tune few can hear. Sun glints on Garcia's silver, something timeless is happening here. Can you learn from the old vaquero? Can the old world and new world collide? Can you hear the Spanish angels when the old vaquero rides? When the old vaquero rides, cabalgando con gracia libre y veloz, hermano del viento feroz de cientos de años atrás. Misterioso vaquero capaz, qué vaquero, qué hombre, ¡hare!
CD. And Lynn, this was I believe your first time to actually ride through Mexico. You'd ridden there, but the first time to make a journey like this. What was that like? What were some of the differences? How were the people like, and if they were different from folks that you encountered or pretty much the same?
Well, I met some wonderful folks in Mexico, of course. We had stopped our ride at the Arizona border, and we were planning to go into Mexico the following day. It took me a little longer, about 5 days, actually, to get the paperwork and everything ready to get a trailer through. Mm-hmm. We had been given a trailer by Lakota of Ohio, and if anybody ever goes by Columbus, Ohio, you need to stop in at Gary Stites, Lakota of Ohio. It is horse-friendly. I've been in a lot of places. I've used a lot of trailers, but I've lived in a horse trailer for a year, And Lakota Trailers are absolute number one on my list. And they have overnight parking and camping for you. They got corrals for your horses. Well, they work on your trailer if you're interested in buying. Western Tax Shop going in there. He purchased a small mall for this trailer sale place. And
wow.
I need to see it. But I went into Mexico, and I bought a little horse trailer in Arizona because we didn't want to take a $70,000 trailer into Mexico. And so I bought a little three-horse, converted it to a two-horse, and I slept in the front half and the horses in the back. And when we got into Mexico, I couldn't get my two horses in. The paperwork just didn't come together quick enough. I was going to be a delay of 2 weeks, so I went to buy two horses, but the problem was I had almost no money to work with. And so I looked at one preacher friend of mine, said, "Hey, I know a guy that's got a horse for sale." I said, "Sure." We went to this fellow's ranch, and it was a lot farther than I thought. And so pretty soon it's dark, and by the time we got there, it's pitch black, and there is an overcast sky, and there was no moon, there was no light. And so I bought that horse by rail. I felt him over. They had to go and rope him out of a field. After I felt him over, he said, "You want to ride him?" I said, "Well, sure." And so we put a saddle on in the dark. Now, you got to know, in Mexico, there's no street lights, there's nothing. And so I took off on this horse, and he went into a full gallop. I had no idea where we were or where we were going. I couldn't see anything, but I trusted the horse knew where he was going. Next thing I know, I'm splashing through a river and come up on the other side. And I stopped him, turned around, went back through the river home again at a dead run, and got off. And I thought, wow, I think he's got the makings. And so I got my cell phone out that's got a flashlight on it, and I looked at him, and he was gray, almost white. And I realized this was a part Arab. It was a Morgan Arab. And so I negotiated him down. They wanted quite a bit of money for him, but we were able to negotiate him down to $700. So I bought him for $700, but that didn't leave me almost anything for my second horse. But I believed God would provide it for me. So the next day we went to another ranch that the preacher had lined up for me. And when I got there, they had three horses tied up, and they were absolutely beauties. Three beautiful quarter horses, and the rancher said to me, "This one here is a roper. This one here we use for cutting. That one here is a walker." Well, he was interpreting wrong. It wasn't a walker; it's a trotter, and he would trot all day long. And so I rode all three horses, and this trotter, he and I just hit it off. Well mannered, very well broke horse, and very expensive horse. And I said to him, "Sir, I likely can't afford to pay you what that horse is worth." But I said, "I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at another one tomorrow for $600. I said, "How much do you want for him?" He said, "How much you pay?" And I said, "Well, let me ride him again." So I took him for another stretch, come back, and I said, "Sir, I know I can't afford to pay you what that horse is worth." He said, "Well, do you like him?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Will he work for you?" I said, "He certainly will." He said, "He's yours," and gave him to me for free.
And, oh, wow.
What a blessing. And we saw the Mexican people respond to us that way all through our trip. They were so kind and generous, right down to riding into a military checkpoint. You know, riding into a military checkpoint when everybody's got black balaclavas and black suits on and 50-caliber machine guns pointed at you that are mounted on the top of their pickups. It's sometimes when I got in there and they found out what I was doing, we had one sergeant that was in charge of one checkpoint. He said, "Wait right here." He went and got a ice-cold Gatorade and gave it to me. And then all the 8 or 10 of them got around with their AK-47s and took pictures of me and my horse. And, really, they treated us very well.
That's great. Well, I lived in El Paso for a number of years, and always enjoyed going over and visiting in Mexico. At that time, Juarez was pretty safe. I think it was not so safe a few years ago. Maybe it's gotten a little bit better now. But when I was there, it was just a great place to visit and enjoy the folks that were there. So found them very warm and very friendly and very family-oriented people.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Very warm. The people are very warm. I tell you what, that country's warm, too.
That country is
warm. I rode down through southern Alberta into Montana this past winter. It was minus 30 with a 70-mile-an-hour wind, which dropped it to minus 50. And I went to get a drink out of my canteen, and it froze solid. And first time I ever had frostbite on my horses. Rare, but both my horses got frostbite. There was nowhere to go. It was flat country. And then when I got to Mexico, I couldn't get a drink out of my canteen. It was so hot. So I could have made coffee out of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Gosh. Quite a difference.
I have a question for Lynn. So how many total rides have you done now to bring awareness for the orphans and to raise money for the orphans? How many rides have you done long distance?
This is number six.
Number six.
The one we just
and
completed,
of all
yeah.
these rides, which one was your most memorable ride and why?
Oh, my. They all kind of gel together, really, for me, because every one has been unique and wonderful. I enjoyed this ride because, really and truly, we were comfortable. My wife drove my pickup with this 40-foot horse trailer with 15-foot short wall living quarters in it that Lakota had given to me. And it's flat screen TV, queen size bed. It was pretty nice. That was not hardship.
Yeah.
This is the first time we've had that blessing.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Well, let's go back and talk about this finish up in Mexico. How long did it take you to ride from the Arizona border on down into Guadalajara?
It took me about 6.5 weeks to cover 1,200 miles. When I left Dead Horse in Alaska to the Arizona border, my calculation averaged 23 miles per day. Now, that includes, like, some days I would be down to 18, maybe 16 in the real steep country where I'm climbing and I run out of trails and I have to find my way to being on the interstate or on backcountry roads, where I could get up to 35, 40 miles. When I got to Mexico, I really boosted up my miles. I was behind schedule, and I switched from an average of 23 to 36 miles per day.
Wow. That's quite a bit of ground to cover during a day on that. So
yeah, day in and day out. You're over, 200 miles a day, a week.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. So when you ended up in Guadalajara, what was that like?
Well, I was so glad to see the end of the trail and sad to see the end of the trail. I enjoyed Mexico, riding through Mexico, but my wife didn't go through that part of the country with me. There was a lot of instability at that time, and so I had a Mexican family take over, and the orphanage sent up a pickup truck for us to use, and they pulled the horse trailer I bought in Arizona down to Guadalajara, but my helpers didn't speak any English, and I didn't speak any Spanish. And so we did a lot of sign language in those 1,200 miles. We got along, but sometimes our pickup and so on got kind of confusing. But we made it. Everything is sharp and poisonous down in that country, and so you got to kind of be on edge. I was glad to see the end of the trail. My wife was still up in Arizona, and then they surprised me. I talked to her on the phone the day before, and she didn't let me have any idea, but they had gone ahead and flew her down to Guadalajara to meet me. And so that was an exciting time for me, and my wife was at the end of the trail to meet me.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Well, quite the journey that you have been on. And so we want to talk about a couple of different things, Lynn. First of all, let's talk about these children and the situation that they live in, and what this means to them.
It's life-changing for these kids that we've been able to help, all the way from Mexico to Philippines and Cambodia, and Lord willing, when I go down in November to Guatemala, our hope is to buy a ranch down there. I'm hoping we can move the kids out of rented facility in the city, San Benito, over to a rural area where they can learn to have a kitchen garden and care for growing things and maybe some livestock. We also are still focusing on India. But these kids, when they come in, oftentimes are on the shady side of death. In Cambodia, which is closest to my heart because it's one that we run and take care of and have been doing that since 2007, we had two girls that were going to be sold into the child sex trade. They were going to be sold by their father. He would have got $30 each for them, and they'd be gone for life. One was 3 years old, and one was six. They had been abused by pedophiles 10 to 12 times a night, 50 to 60 times on the weekend. And they die very young, or they are so badly diseased and abused, they have no life left. And so we're grateful. The police intervened and brought those girls to us before they got sold, and now they're happy, healthy, strong little girls that have worked in our church ministry there. They've grown up in that orphanage, and we're Oshkosh and Nike and all kinds of nice things like our kids here would have.
Right, that's great. Well, talk to us a little bit about Smoky Mountain.
Smoky Mountain is not like West Virginia. It's a garbage dump, 300 feet high, 100 acres, solid waste, no landfill. It was cut off to foreigners 3 years ago because international pressure on Cambodia says you've got to clean up Smoky Mountain because it's drawing negative information from other countries. And the reason is over 1,000 families live on top of Smoky Mountain and still do. We took three children off the top of the mountain and brought them down. They live with us. They stayed at the orphanage. I had a mom come to me while I was up there, and I wear a bandana, and I have to have that over my mouth just so I can breathe up there. Because you got to understand, the methane gas coming up off that 300 feet of waste at 100, 110 degrees, sometimes spontaneous combustion, it's foggy and smoky up there all the time. And this mom begged me to take her two children off the garbage dump. I told her I would take them the following morning. She would bring them down to the children's home, and I said, we'll look after your kids. She never showed up, and I sent two pastors up to find out what went wrong and found out that she'd been killed that night, run over by a garbage truck, and we'd lost the children also. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd acted sooner, but yesterday's gone, and we can't get it back. We have to just go on from here.
Wow. Wow. Well, and such tragedy that's taking place, and of course the things that you guys are doing to help bring these children out of that condition. One of the things that that struck me and were the number of landmines that they have in Cambodia.
Yes, it's estimated that Cambodia is the highest landmine country in the world, more so than Afghanistan, Iraq. It is calculated more than 10 million landmines still in the ground. And even with the help from the United States, Canada, and Europe, they calculate it would take 100 years to extract all the landmines out of that country right now. So a number of years ago, the Prime Minister of Cambodia said because of that, then they, as Cambodians, would clear the landmines themselves one leg at a time. And I've seen more amputees in Cambodia than anywhere else I've ever traveled.
I mean, that statement alone is just so disturbing. So you
it
know,
is.
Just the vision of that. Yeah.
There are real people with real names, with real families, and some of them have real jobs, although unemployment ratio is very, very high. But they certainly are wonderful people, and although they have been kind of forgotten by the rest of the world, there is a great need there.
Yeah. Well, again, Lynn, the work that you're doing is just amazing to help build these orphanages and take these children out of the conditions that they're in and give them new life and new hope. And, you know, the trail riding, the journey that you're taking is an adventure. But it's an adventure with purpose. And so I know that we have folks that would love to get involved and contribute. And let's talk about how they can do that.
Well, there's a number of ways to contact us. We do have a Facebook page. It's called Ride for Mission 6, using the Roman numeral V1. That has all our contact information plus PayPal on it that people can donate. Or they can go to our website, which is CanadianPonyExpress.com. Again, that has a link to the Facebook page and our church page where there's a donate PayPal number or a button to push. Or they can contact me direct. And my telephone number is 705, area code, 330-9602. That's a Canadian number. Or they can call my U.S. phone. It's a Texas number, 713-882-4117.
Okay. All right. So get in touch with Lynn. Visit the websites. you know, everybody can't give a lot, but maybe you can give a little bit. And a little bit means a lot to help these kids. And
absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Every you know, every little bit makes a difference. The average wage in Cambodia is $1 per day. So you can imagine what the help from people from North America can give these people. We live in a bubble in North America compared to the rest of the world, where 90% of the population don't live like we do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you were talking about this father selling those children for $30 a piece, life to some of these people doesn't have a lot of value. And so if we think that we can't give much, you just imagine that a father would sell his child over there for $30, and it makes you realize what you can give and do is really a lot.
It really is, Gary, yes.
It really is a lot. And I don't think I'll get over that statement that the Prime Minister made about getting rid of the landmines one leg at a time. The picture that that paints is just devastating. Just devastating.
Yes.
But well, Lynn, you just gotten back from Cambodia, and what's next for you outside of the fact that you get to visit with Tina May and myself on Saddle Up America?
Hey, I really enjoyed our time together.
Yeah, highlight of the week, I'm sure. But what's next for Lynn?
Well, tomorrow morning I leave on a 3-day packing trip with my three boys. Every year we get together and we go out for 3 or 4 days camping. My boys are all grown up now, but they're all hardcore guys, you know, and they're tough on Dad. I'm 61 years old now. And when I made this trip, they said, Dad, you got to be in shape. And so they put me into a routine. They said, you used to be able to do 250 sit-ups and 250 push-ups in a day. You need to be able to do that again if you're making this ride. I said, you got to be joking. I'm 61. And so on my 60th birthday, they called in and said, how'd you do? And I said, I did 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 sit-ups. So I got the red light or the green light to go ahead on that trip for my boys. And it was a blessing, because there was a couple of times I needed that type of resilience in order to get through some of that crazy country.
I would think. Have you videoed, have you filmed any of these trips, like the one that you did this last one?
Not much. You know, I really wanted to. And, you know, crossing rivers and stuff was a challenge for me. And coming through, it wasn't all sunshine, nice days. A lot of times it was like sub-zero, snowing and blowing. Sometimes I had to cross rivers that were 3/4 covered with ice. In videoing would have been a blessing to have somebody along to do that, but I didn't. I did get a little bit of video with my I had a GoPro camera with me, and I got some on my cell phone, and I got a host of still pictures, probably over 7,000.
That's great. Well, I started to say, now the next trip that you take like that, Tina May loves to ride and she loves to take pictures, so if you need a videographer. Yeah, if you need a videographer, I'm sure she would just love to get out and help document this thing.
Hey, I'm always looking for somebody to ride with me. You bet.
Absolutely.
Goodness. Well, it's been great to visit with you. And let's give folks again the website that they can visit, or websites, and the Facebook pages for them to go and like.
Sure. Our Facebook page is Ride for Missions 6. Using the Roman numeral V1, or our website is CanadianPonyExpress.com. My Canadian telephone number is 705-330-9602. My U.S. number is 713-882-4117. And I have an email address, is ncbc99@yahoo.ca. That's Norman Charlie Bob Charlie, 99@yahoo.ca.
Okay, all right. So, folks, get in touch with Lynn, and any help that you can provide for these kids would be appreciated. And I'm so glad that we got to visit with you, and we look forward to having you come back again and kind of catch up with where you are on your next journey. And be fun to visit with you.
Well, thank you so much for your interest, Tina Mae and Gary. I sure have appreciated it and your hospitality to be on the show. Thank you so much. You're happier than a squirrel in a walnut tree when we get a chance to share what God's done.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. And and by the way, folks, Lynn can go back and listen to this show anytime after it's finished. So it will be in a permanent archive, and you're welcome to share that, because I'm sure some folks miss the show at this hour of the day and would love to listen to it. And I'm going to go back and listen to some of your stories again.
Well, remember, keep your feet in the stirrups and your hands in the reins, and may God bless all the trails you ride.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.
You too.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, and God bless.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Tina Mae and kind of find out about some things that are coming up on Saddle Up America. And you can listen to us, as you are now, at EquestrianLegacy.net on our free mobile app. And
I can see my family's tears. I can feel the depth of sorrow as they mourn. My body lies in ruin beneath the stand of Douglas fir. From their arms for mortal life I have been torn. But I live strong, and I love deeply on the earth. And I chose the road of righteousness and truth. And I held the girl that loved me, prayed for the one who gave me birth, as I smiled and bid farewell to my own youth. So let me fly again on unbreakable wings. We will meet again in the land. With the love of my life here for me to hold, and praise the land where I took my final breath. May those seven river mountains ever stand, for I lived a life of freedom and I died a cowboy's death. And there's nothing more to ask.
Lauryn Hill and a great song, The Land of No Return, from his latest CD, Spirit Rider. And Tina May, this was a fascinating show today, talking with Lynn and the different journeys that he's taken, and for what a great cause, and that's to help these children. And
absolutely. I mean, he rides with a purpose, and he really wants to help these children and these orphanages in these third worlds. I mean, that's tragic.
Well, it's pretty sad to think about parents selling their children for $30, and you know, I could make a joke and say I felt like giving mine away at one point in time, but that would only be a joke. But this is real stuff, where these people are.
Yes, it is.
Are selling their children and starving.
And then they have a tortured life. It's horrible.
And what?
And so, and then the children have a tortured life, and sometimes, you know, very short lifespan, and it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
Yeah, but anyway, we appreciate everything.
For what he does and for his writing mission and to help them.
Yeah, appreciate Lynn's efforts to get that done and what he's doing there. And again, if you want to support him, support the orphanages and what they're doing, you can visit them on Facebook. That's Ride for the Mission, Roman numeral 6. And you can find that and find out more information and connect to their website as well. We've had some technical problems with you today, so you've been unusually quiet. And and of course, it's always fun for me to play with you with my mute button, so I can kind of turn you off and on.
Oh, you love that mute button. You love it. I don't know.
The others
might love it too. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of background noise coming on from your end today, and so we'll work on getting that stuff straightened out. But always so much fun to have you on from Missouri, and of course we're back here in Tennessee, and fun conversation and fun guest. And who do we have joining us next Tuesday on Saddle Up America?
Tuesday, we have Rebecca Jimenez, owner and founder of Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue. Then we travel to Black, Missouri and talk with Joanne Becker, owner of Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort.
Okay, just love Joanne and George, and so it'll be a lot of fun talking with them at Brushy Creek. And it's going to be an interesting show with Dr. Jimenez talking about their rescue, because this is not a rescue to take skinny horses in and find homes. This is actually rescue, you know, where they're going out.
This is emergency rescue.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's a difference there. So this is going to be very fascinating to talk with Dr. Jimenez about that. And this week on the Campfire Cafe, coming up on Thursday, we're going to be visiting with cowboy poet and a hoot, Susie Knight, one of the most fun people to talk with. She's a real character, but a great award-winning cowboy poet, and she'll be joining us with Bobby Jean Bell, our co-host from California, on Thursday, and we'll also be talking ranch rodeo. There's a ranch rodeo final coming up in Tennessee, and we're going to be talking with Susan Ingram from Taproot Farm about that. And then, as always, the best way to start your week is with Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And that's on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and you can listen to all of our shows on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. You can listen live or catch the archive podcast anytime after it's over with. So let your friends know about us. And if you're enjoying the shows, let us know about it. And if you don't enjoy the shows, don't tell anybody. So I'm kidding. If there's something you would like to see improved, we sure want to hear that. So,
absolutely.
Don't we, Tina May?
Absolutely. You know, they might want me to have a mute button.
They might. But, hey, let's talk about the Legacy Club just a minute. You want to tell folks about our Legacy Club?
Absolutely. Our Legacy Club is free. It offers discounts to the members from our Legacy Club sponsors. You are automatically entered into our drawings for free prizes, like our end-of-the-year prize of a two-horse Hydro-Horse watering system from our premier sponsor, Hydro-Horse. You can sign up to be a Legacy Club member at equestrianlegacy.net.
Okay. And
I love horses.
You do like that. I mean, I've seen that, and last year's winner happened to be from Tennessee, just a little west of Nashville. Jerry Carey won that last year, and Jerry just absolutely loves his. And he and Helen took that in their trailer with them all out through the west back this summer. So not only, you know, join membership with the Legacy Club and you might win one of those, but you can find out more information about them on our website at equestrianlegacy.net and just go ahead and buy one. I mean, that makes sure that you get it right, huh?
That's right. That's exactly right. I tell you what, I love mine so much I put it in my other trailer as well. So I've got one in my two-horse sooner, and I've got one in my stock trailer. And when we went on that month-long trip, that was handy, handy dandy.
That's good. Well, from what I hear, you should have used some of the water for a bath, but that's another story. So, gosh. Hey, this is a little bit early, but not really. We've got some really neat things that we've got planned for Equestrian Legacy Radio's. Now it is a music, arts, and crafts festival that will be taking place with our trail ride and with the Craig Cameron's Extreme Cowboy Association National Championship as we're raising money to help kids with brittle bone disease. That comes up the first week of June, but I'm telling you what, we've got some of the most amazing talent that's lined up right now for our shows. These will be music events that will be taking place for 3 days, and we've got some of the finest artisans and craftspeople throughout the Southeast that are coming in for this. So it is going to be a lot of fun, and we've got other little things in the works to go along with that. So check out our website at equestrianlegacy.net. We'll be keeping you up to date with information, and we've got some amazing artists and more to come. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
What's the date?
That is June the 2nd through the 5th.
There you go.
June 2nd through the 5th. And so it's gonna be a lot of fun. And quite frankly, we've already had people, the cabins were booked before the event ended last year, and we've already got folks that have started making reservations now for the 2016 event. So this is going to be something else this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Any final thoughts you want to share with folks before we sign off for today?
I just really ask for people to go to the ride for missions and number 6, that's Roman numeral 6, the Facebook page, follow Lynn Crowe, see what he does. He rides with a purpose and a mission in his heart. And I think it's something, these third world countries and these orphans, they need our help, so just kind of check it out.
Okay, all right. So anyway, a fun show, and we really appreciate you guys for listening to us. It means a lot. We love to get the emails and messages from folks that are listening to the show all over the world, and that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Over 60 countries that folks are listening to our shows, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate that. And folks are telling other people about Equestrian Legacy Radio, and so we appreciate you doing that as well. But time to kind of sign off. We want to remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net. And this is one more song from Mary Kay. Love this new album that she has called Ride a Wide Circle. But I thought this was kind of cool, Tina May. This is one called The Prairie Preacher. And
The Prairie Preacher,
So with Lynn on, I thought this is a great song to wrap up with. But it is a terrific song from Mary Kay. And we want to thank you, as always, for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we'll see you on the air this coming Thursday at noon for the Campfire Cafe. Thanks for listening.
Most folks say the prairie preacher rode into town. He was every shade of somber, from a squint down to a saunter, and his coat an old Confederate gray. To the curious crowd he spoke aloud, in a sonorous voice he did say, "I seek not for commerce, no vices I crave. I've simply come for souls to save. 'Cause if you're going through hell, I've been there as well, till I heard Jesus calling my name. Won't you come take my hand, join his blood-washed band? Are you ready for a mighty change? Ah, nothing's been the same since the prairie preacher came to town. His eyes a strange hue of otherworldly blue. Most folks thought, oh, he must be insane. But the net that he threw was only meant for a few. His eyes searched for the souls he could claim. The banker in town looked down at the ground, if he confessed, what would folks think of him? But there were two young brother miners from South Carolina who stepped forward to lay down their sin. They said, "We've been through hell, we see you've been there as well. We hear Jesus calling our name. So we'll come take a stand with your blood-washed band. Yes, sir, we are ready for a change. Ah, nothing's been the same since the prairie preacher came to town." Her hair was piled up high on that hot 4th of July. Her cotton dress, it clung to her skin. She was used to a roughness, a callous kind of toughness. She was used to the low company of men. But with a prairie preacher's words, something in her heart stirred, and she knew that she could not deny it. God's love found a way on that hot July day. She stepped forward into the light. She said, "I'm going through hell. I see you've been there as well. I think I hear Jesus calling my name. I'll reach out my hand, join your blood-washed band. Lord Almighty, I'm ready for a change. Ah, nothing's been the same since the prairie preacher came to town." Frontier fashion, they took straight action, but the only water to be got, where the horses were tired, they moved them aside, and those folks were baptized right there in that trough. With that shallow immersion came a mighty conversion. There was weeping for joy when they were through. Our 20 souls were claimed out there on the plains, in a town filled with brothels and saloons. That Independence Day, that Christian band all rode away. They left in haste without a sound. Then thick as boiling sin, dark clouds came rolling in, and the wrath of God itself came howling down. That is no distortionist to the biblical proportion of the twister that tore down that town. Oh, nothing's been the same since the prairie preacher came.